Ladies and gentlemen, it's a great honor for me to honor Mr. Nicholas Schuess, the chair president of Wim Corbett in this, on this occasion. I would say the CEO of Red Rye F-Lice is the most important. But anyway, congratulations on 200 years, and it's fascinating with the song that you played on this movie. The times are indeed changing, and looking back at 200 years, it's a fascinating history. And would you be so kind, Nico, to share with us how it all began, please?
Well, first of all, to Nicolas and to you, thank you very much for this award. I'm humbled and I feel proud and happy, and I'm very happy that you don't call it a Lifetime Achievement Award, which was the name you gave it in the beginning, because a Lifetime Achievement Award is something where you think now it's time to go, and I still want to stay in this beautiful industry for a couple of years. Well, it began on the 24th of March in 1824 when Ferdinand Lice, with 23 years, registered as a merchant in the city of Hamburg, and started in the shop of his parents to sell hats. And he made this extremely successfully. Maybe some of you know the story from Alice in Wonderland, where it says, "Crazy as a hat maker." And we always wondered where this comes from. Well, one explanation is that Ferdinand Lice, who was so extremely successful in selling hats, went into shipping. And that was pretty crazy, but apart from that, he sold his hats really successfully, and didn't get paid always with money. He got paid with colonial goods, such as cacao, cotton, coffee, what have you, sugar, and rum, and then he imported that. And soon he learned that he can make much better money by importing goods than only selling his hats. So he stopped that and became a trader. And after being a couple of years a successful trader, he thought it's cheaper to transport the goods myself. And he did that. Yeah, and that's how it evolved over time. Interesting is that his principles, which he wrote down, are still today pretty much exactly the same principles that we try to live up to, which are the principles of a merchant from the Hanseatic city of Hamburg. Yes.
Mm. And if I could say pick up on that, because I think, if I'm correct, that your company motto is changing times require new ideas, genuine will remain. Could you explore a bit on that, please?
Yes, I can try. The song that you just heard was actually the initiation of the phrase that we use. Times they are changing was too complicated, but times they are changing and require new ideas, genuine, we remain as really a derivative out of that. Well, over the 200 years, as far as shipping is concerned, we've seen probably every aspect of it. We've done liner shipping, we've done operations, we've done many, many different types of ships. If we wouldn't do any business where we have lost money before, probably we couldn't do anything in shipping, because I think we've lost money in every single aspect which we have tried to live on in this industry. But the genuity, maybe I can explain that with the principle that we have, that we only offer business to our partners which we would do ourselves, or which we would do if we were in his or her shoes. For example, the KG crisis, which became a major issue for many, many German Hamburg-based shipping companies, didn't affect us so much, because we were never really involved in the KG business. And the extent we were involved was to the extent that we needed money to run ships. We didn't want to run ships to collect money from investors. So that differentiation maybe is part of this genuity that we are referring to.
Interesting. I would like now to turn a little bit to what we also heard previously during the day about collaboration, about the importance of Hamburg and Germany as a shipping cluster. And obviously with 200 years, you basically formed the shipping cluster here. But also with some modesty, also the origins of my company has been mm-hmm. around for quite some time with Germanische Lloyd and now DNV. So how important would you say that that the German and not least the Hamburg shipping cluster is, and how do you value its importance, and what about sort of the partnerships that you have formed in this cluster?
Well, I think that the German shipping cluster as such is on the way back up. We have a larger order book. No, I think you mentioned it this morning. We are having 200 ships on order from Germany. So the German cluster is on the growth path. Hamburg is certainly the marine capital in Germany. I think apart from Athens, Oslo, to some extent Copenhagen, maybe London, but then in that group I mentioned because Shadan is here, Istanbul, but apart from that I would mention Hamburg as kind of like the capital cities of the marine European world. We have the advantage of having a large liner company. We have the largest bulk operator in the world in based in Hamburg. We have very large container vessel provider companies, tonnage providers. We have a very fragmented industry. We have the head office of DNV for container ships and marine business in Hamburg. So we have service industry. We have a little less financing still there, but a little less. That's a bit of a concern. And the transition from the container, from the KG market, i.e. the container market, is not fully done yet. Some companies are moving into other segments of shipping. I think Hamburg is still very important. It's up there and it's representative. If you look at the representatives from Hamburg in international institutions, not to mention myself in BIMCO, but Rolf Haben Jansen in World Shipping Council, or Jens Meyer in the Global Association of Ports. Hamburg is there. Yes, thank you.
Absolutely. You started by talking about hats. So let's change your hat for a second. Yeah. So let's change your hat to your role as president and chair in BIMCO. And this morning I mentioned that red seemed to be the color of the day. And any reflections on the U.S. election and the win of Donald Trump from a BIMCO perspective?
Yeah, please? That's. I'm very glad that you push this to the BIMCO part. My personal opinion is neither relevant nor important, and it's pretty firm. So I'm glad that I don't have to answer that. BIMCO is a totally unpolitical, non-political institution. We have members from 130 countries, and you can trust me, there is every potential political opinion represented in our membership. And we try to stay out of that discussion. But we follow principles. And the principles are laid down in our position papers. And the overruling aim of what we do is, and Chadan mentioned that this morning, is level playing field as far as competition is concerned, free passage of the seas, a green transition support to the extent that we believe it is realistic, and global regulation. So these are the four main matters we look at. And if you look at a president who's saying that he will put 60% levy or tax or import duty or whatever you call it, on all products from China, if you look how the renminbi moved this morning, I mean, it's down, I forgot by how many percent, but very high single-digit percentage point just in one day. And it moved weaker before already. So That has not only implications for the Trans-Pacific trade, that has also implications for Europe towards the East, because if the Chinese have less capital to buy our product, then we have to look at the green transition. We just heard that the IRA is working in the US, and probably that is continued by a Trump administration because it's benefiting his voters who are based in Texas and the South. But whether he will support the UN remains to be seen. Whether he supports a global levy, which we are all aiming for, to keep the competition right. Antonio Dominguez from IMO Secretary General said it doesn't matter whether you call it a levy, a tax, a fee, all that doesn't matter. He wants a market-based measure. Whether that is supported by a Trump administration remains to be seen. Without that, there will not be a green transition in shipping. So there is room for concern. Summing it up, nothing is eaten as hot as it is cooked. And secondly, in 4 years, there are elections, and the mechanisms, the democratic mechanisms, even though the Congress went to the Trump administration as well, they are very strong and firm. And so I'm not worried. We are watching it and take it with calm, but seriousness.
Thank you. Thank you. That was important and interesting to hear your views on that. This morning, and also in the previous months of this year, and before, we talked a lot about digitalization, and not least also about decarbonization. And this is naturally very important for the future of shipping. And there are many forces at play, as we all know. We heard just recently about regulations, about public funding, but also about customer expectations and many other aspects. So what do you see as the primary driver pushing the industry towards decarbonization, Nico?
Yes, I get
I know
this
it's
question.
A difficult one.
It's a difficult one, and I would say that there is not a single partner who is a sufficient condition for success. There are a couple of partners who are a necessary condition for success. And I don't know whether you all are familiar with the economic model of sufficiency and necessity, but what it basically means is that nobody can do it on his own. Now, the most important partner, I would think, is the IMO. Because without global regulation forcing us to, for economic reasons, shift to other fuels, it will not come. But without the large shippers forcing us, like IKEA, like Walmart, saying we want to sell green products to our people, to our customers, so please turn green. Also, it wouldn't work. We need a lot of input from different parties to reach a solution for the price gap. Over time, it will get easier because the penalty will go higher and production cost of green fuel will get lower. But at the moment, yes, it's very difficult to choose one particular. We are very grateful that DNV is so active in it as well, with technical expertise and consulting us and pushing it. And your path 2050 is extremely respected in the industry as a contribution. So yeah, different bits from different people.
Yeah, thank you. And as you mentioned, the Over Maritime Forecast report is putting a lot of emphasis on energy efficiency as well. And we also heard this morning that was very much talked about. And coming a little bit back to the legacy of FLIES, so 160 years ago, the tall ships of FLIES, known as the Flying P Line, were for decades faster than all competitors. And in your view, will sales again become important for modern ships?
It will be part of it. It will be part. I don't foresee full-rigged flying feeliners again on the sea because it's very labor-intensive. But of course, the wind propulsion is one of the different steps. There are many, both technical, operational, and of course renewable fuels. We don't believe at BIMCO that there is one solution. We are technologically totally agnostic. There will be many solutions depending on the trade, depending on the vessel type, depending on the distance sailed. Carbon capture will be one of them. So wind will be a potentially a small portion of that as well. But one thing that I keep hearing more and more, and the better is a little bit the enemy of the good, is the discussion about nuclear, which people look at increasingly. Huge different problems involving, such as regulation, insurance. How do you insure something that is carrying the value of 7-8 years of fuel? That's very expensive insurance. How do you allow ships like that coming into ports which are in the city, like Hamburg, etc.? But yes, there will be many alternatives. We are following it all with interest.
Mm-hmm. Thank you. And maybe now returning to your role as CEO of FLICE. So we heard also ammonia was brought up quite a bit in the previous panel. I think it was also said that there are a multitude, as you say, of potential future fuels. But it seems to be an ideal low-emission energy source. And you, in your company, you are involved in this and you are planning to convert or go for this fuel. And could you share with us the progress and the plans that you have? And I think many of us, not least the classification societies, are concerned around the toxicity of ammonia and not least also the seafarer safety for ammonia as a fuel. So if you could touch upon also those issues, please.
Yes. Thank you much for asking me as Lies, the right head, because as I said in BIMCO, we are technologically agnostic. As Lies, I really believe that ammonia will play a major role. Question about the seafarers' safety with ammonia is a very important one. We ship ammonia now for 30 years. We had not a single lost time injury because of inhalation of ammonia. So we believe that we can handle the product. Maybe without going into too much detail, but just to share what is the danger about ammonia, because people seem to not to know. Maybe you remember from school, you had something like this, a bubble, and you filled ammonia into it, and you had a little pipe coming down, a little pipe going up, and then you put this into water, the pipe on there, and then the ammonia sucks the water in and it spreads out on top. That's a typical chemistry school children test. And what it shows is that ammonia is extremely hydrophilic. It loves water. It sucks the water from around, if it is in gas form. And that is really also what happens when you inhale it. You inhale it, and it connects with the water, with the membranes of your lungs, and sucks all the water from around. So basically what happens in your body, you drown because your lungs are filled with water, and you die of drought because the surroundings are without water. So the main concern is that if you have the engine room with liquid ammonia combusted and you have a very, very tiny leakage, it immediately turns into gas with a huge increase of volume. So you have an over pressure. And then if you breathe it, it's becoming dangerous. We believe, and of course, the question should go back to you, how to solve this technically. But we believe, we understand that there are solutions for that. For us, it's very important that whatever happens in the ammonia field, it's done by people who really know what they are doing. because if you look at your country, at Norway, you had a hydrogen infrastructure plan for cars. And there was one accident at a petrol station, which in fact didn't have anything to do with the hydrogen in the petrol station, but it destroyed basically the market, and Tesla was the winner of that accident. And that could happen in shipping as well. One accident makes the industry move elsewhere, and that's why we are very concerned to concentrate on that.
I think we will try to answer that question on the safety before DNV turns 200 years.
Like hopefully. Hopefully.
Okay, so coming back again as the chair and president of BIMCO, so you are naturally then very closely connected with the concerns of ship owners worldwide. And given that sort of input and the dialogues that you have, what would you say are the top issues keeping your members awake at night right now?
Well, I think what keeps the members awake at night is what we have heard about. Decarbonization, regulation, market forces, disruptions, global level playing field, the Houthis. I was a bit surprised about the reaction this morning about the Houthis because we think it's really bad. It's obvious that it is helping freight rates in the short term, but it's really bad if cargo finds other ways to move. And cargo is moving. And we believe that we have to have a very peaceful and free passage of the seas as well. So these are the general concerns of the ship owners. If you would ask me what are the matters where BIMCO is trying to concentrate on, or what was the heading of my presidency really, where we thought we should move, and Shadan is my past president, I think second past, but very close and always involved. So we do this in a very, very aligned way within the BIMCO organization. But the effort was to increase the collaboration among the shipping industry main bodies. And these main bodies are ICS, International Chamber of Shipping, Intertanko, Intercargo, World Shipping Council. World Shipping Council is for the container people. They are based in Washington. They are not part of the so-called round table. But of course, no government in the world will do anything without asking the container people today, because that's what the governments consider the national carriers, really. And then we had the non-shipping but marine-related groups like IAX, like port authorities, like also the international group by the P&I clubs, etc. So the idea is, and there I think we came a reasonable way in the recent years, that there is no vanity of the organizations, which we had in the past. Vanity of organizations was when one secretary general of an organization published something, the other one felt obliged next day to call Ian Lewis or whoever and tell him that his opinion is a different one. So that has changed, and the presidents are more collaborating as well. The roundtable discussions are very peaceful. It's not only because we are trying to be nicer people, it's also the realization that it is absolutely necessary that we speak with one voice towards the regulator. Not to confuse them, more important than it maybe has been in the past.
Hmm. Thank you so much. So collaboration is a key
word,
but also in this context. Nico, it was such a pleasure to have this dialogue on stage with you, and it is such an achievement to be, as a company, 200 years, and not least also in the shipping industry, where we know it is very cyclical. So again, congratulations so much. A big hand for Nico Schuss and Red Rye FLIs, please.